Our first speaker is Professor Timothy Brooks, the author of Quelling the People, this book here. Tim had recently joined Stanford University, where he's a specialist in Chinese history. He received his PhD in history from Harvard University. And before joining Stanford, he had taught Chinese history for 10 years at the University of Toronto. He just told me that it turns out for personal reasons he's going to be moving back to Toronto. So his stay out here has been short, but we're delighted that he's been out here. In addition to his book, Quelling the People, his books on China include Praying for Power, The Asiatic Mode of Production in China, Culture and Economy, China and Historical Capitalism, and The Confusions of Pleasure. But it was beginning with his work as an exchange student in China from 1974 to 76 when he began his interest in human rights and worked with Amnesty International. The result was the authoring and then later publication of this book in 1992. So I'm very pleased to introduce Tim Brooks.
I want to talk to you about memory today. The film we just saw was an example of memory. It's remembering Tiananmen in a certain way. And what I want to do in the 15 or 20 minutes that I'm going to speak here is to think about, to ask, how should we remember Tiananmen? What does this memory mean? Why might it be important? And why might it not be important? Anniversaries are powerful moments. Anniversaries are moments when we try and remember things. We try and remember things that were important in our life that perhaps have slipped into inattention with daily life. Anniversaries are points when we can try and take stock of what we've been doing with our lives and where we've gone. Anniversaries are also opportunities, if one side forgets, for the other side to get annoyed. I constantly do this with my wife. She'll eventually get used to the fact that I always forget our anniversary. But there are certain historical anniversaries that are hard to forget. China is a country in which anniversaries are extremely important, perhaps because there's not much of a public sphere. People can't discuss all the issues they'd like to. And so at certain moments in the calendar, certain years in a decade, will become more important than others. 1999 is the 50th year of the founding of the People's Republic, the beginning of the rule of the Communist Party in China, and it's also the 10th year of Tiananmen. And I'm delighted that the Independent Institute has chosen to remember Tiananmen this year. There have been a number of other venues around North America to think about Tiananmen and think where we stand now. Let me start, though, with the fateful moment. Mr. Thoreau has given you some sense of the issues that were in play in June of 1989. The moment that turned these issues, which issues of democracy, accountability, personal responsibility, clean government, these issues, of course, are universal around the world. But the point at which the issues were no longer simply issues but something more came about 10:45 on the night of June the 3rd. The People's Liberation Army started moving in on the city. You saw some of this on the film clip. They started moving in on the city of Beijing late in the afternoon of June the 3rd. There were columns coming in from all the points of the compass. Two of the largest columns were coming in from the west and from the southwest. The column coming in from the west got stopped. And it wasn't students that stopped the army. Nor was it, by and large, students who died. Most of the people who fought the army and died were ordinary citizens. The column coming in from the west was stopped about 8:30 at night. The soldiers were told to chant, "We will put an end to the turmoil. Soldiers don't stop until the turmoil stops." You certainly saw turmoil on the film a few minutes ago. The question, of course, is who started the turmoil? Did the government try and stop it, or did it in fact get it going? Around 10 p.m., warning shots were fired into the air. People scattered, but they immediately came back. In fact, the crowd was angered with the warning shots and called out, "Put down your arms, put down your arms," to the soldiers. By 10:30, the officer in charge of this group was losing patience, and he screamed, "Charge, you bunch of cowards, sweep away this trash." And at 10:35, several dozen stun grenades were tossed. Now, stun grenades don't hurt unless you actually get hit with one, but they make a terrible noise, they stun you, they terrify you, and you run away. The stun grenades didn't work. The soldiers got another 100 meters down the road, and then again, people just poured in and stopped the army. And so at this point, they radioed to the military central command for permission to go ahead at any cost, which is the euphemism for using live ammunition on unarmed civilians. The permission came in just before 10:45, which is when an eyewitness I talked to saw the first bodies being removed. The column coming in from the southwest went through the same experience. They got permission to move ahead at any cost at 10:48, and the firing started there as well. And this has happened all around the city. Some columns didn't get permission till 2 or 3 in the morning of June the 4th, but eventually the permission came in, and the army made it to the square and occupied the square on June 4th. So that's the moment that turned what was a largely peaceful, somewhat confused, but always lively attempt to talk about democracy in China into the massacre that we remember today. And without that order to go ahead at any cost, we wouldn't be here today 10 years later trying to remember the event. Well, some people say we should forget Tiananmen. They suggest that China is changing. The forces that caused the violence 10 years ago have now passed. We needn't worry about it anymore. The urge to forget is also perhaps tied to certain interests, perhaps certain business interests that don't want boats rocked, perhaps with certain government interests, certainly in China, elites who are in power and wish to remain in power. And how do you forget? Well, you say that Tiananmen doesn't matter. I was at a conference actually in Toronto on June the 4th. A conference was organized there to remember Tiananmen. And a political scientist got up and spoke, and he said his view of Tiananmen was the hiccup theory. That is, Tiananmen was just a hiccup. And by and large, the changes that got going in the 1980s, the economic liberalization has carried forward, and Tiananmen doesn't matter. I tend not to favor the hiccup theory. I think remembering is important. So why remember an event this atrocious? I overheard someone in the audience saying that she didn't like to look at death on the video. Neither, frankly, do I. I don't care for this footage. But I think every death is a loss. Equally importantly, states have a responsibility to protect the lives and property of their citizens. And in this case, this didn't happen. So how do we remember Tiananmen? Well, there have been many efforts of different sorts to remember what happened in 1989. The first thing was to start building replicas of the goddess of democracy. They've appeared all over the world. Most cities with a large Chinese community put up some kind of a memorial to Tiananmen in 1990-1991. It seemed that the first urge was to mourn. But something more is needed. And starting about 1993, there have been efforts in China to get the government to rethink what happened in 1989, to rethink its decision. In 1993, a famous document called the Peace Charter was published. Several prominent and less prominent Chinese put their names to it, calling for a more peaceful process of transition in China. It was followed in 1995 with a somewhat more strongly worded document called Draw Lessons from June 4th. These documents wanted to do what is called in Chinese reversing the verdict, to change the judgment on Tiananmen. One of the people who was involved in this was a student named Li Hai. He had been collecting information about people who had died. He'd gotten put together files on about 900 of the people who died. And he was arrested in 1996, and he was put in jail for 9 years for doing this. His mother, Gong Liwen, continues to be campaigning for his release. She's only campaigning for him. Her first concern is the memory of her son's freedom, but she hopes that her campaign will unlock the cages to several thousand more people who are held on political charges in China. 1997, Legislative Council in Hong Kong did the same thing. They passed a motion calling for a reappraisal, a reversal of verdict. Well, To reverse a verdict is a major thing to achieve in Chinese politics. China's political voice is unitary, it's univocal, the only voice, by and large, is the Communist Party. For it to reverse its verdict means for it to say it did something wrong. And most of us don't like to admit doing wrong, and the Communist Party even more so, because the issue is if it admits it was wrong, perhaps it's admitting that it is no longer the legitimate voice in the government. So asking for a reappraisal is politically a powerful thing. But in the last couple of years, there is yet another wave of thinking about how to remember Tiananmen. And this is to call for a judicial tribunal, to ask for an investigation that has legal consequences that may result in some people going to prison for their activities on June 4th. The first person, the first outspoken person to do this is Ding Zilin. Ding Zilin is a now retired professor from Beijing University. She had one son, Zhang Jilian, and Zhang disappeared on the night of June 4th into the crowds, and he eventually died. Ding has been working tirelessly since 1989 to try and bring together the victims of 1989 and their families, and to get them to agitate for some kind of redress. But in 1997, she submitted a petition to the National People's Congress calling for a legal tribunal. So no longer is it simply, we want to reverse the verdict. The call now is for some kind of judicial proceeding to be mounted. It fell on deaf ears, but it was a powerful first statement. She's repeated this this year, and it's not only her voice now, but many other voices are saying that China needs to have some kind of a judicial inquiry into 1989. There are some who wonder what the purpose of this is, particularly in a world in which we have more atrocities than any of us can deal with. We have Yugoslavia, we have Kosovo, we have Rwanda, we have Somalia, we have Iran, we have Kuwait. The list is almost endless. Why care about a couple of thousand people dying in Beijing? Well, I think we can't all care about everything, but I think it's important that when violence is used by the state in protection of its own interests, it is necessary for people to speak out against it. And I think for consequences to be applied. I thought what I would do, in fact, is end my comments with a message that Ding Zilin circulated this March to talk about her efforts to try and find out about the victims of June the 4th. She goes on at some length to talk about the various stories she can tell about what she's done to try and track down the victims. By and large, victims' families don't want this kind of news to get out. And she finishes her report by saying, I'll stop writing now because this is not a story. It is not meant to just provoke the easy tears of readers. I often consider the fact that people have only one life, only one. Life is sacred, but death also is sacred. If everyone could see life and death in this way, maybe we could decrease the number of calamities and massacres. As Chinese people, we may have many goals and dreams, but I think we must put a priority on establishing a moral system in which the reckless disregard for human life is put behind us. If someone were to ask me, why did you choose to document death, I think that this would be my answer. And so I would say the same thing, in fact, for the book that I ended up writing, Quelling the People. It's a book about violence. It's a book about death and destruction. And I felt, as a Chinese historian, I had a responsibility to create a public record that someday will be more widely accepted and hopefully perhaps even heard in a court of law. Thank you for coming tonight. And I'm just the professor. You have two student leaders who are actually going to talk to you. So let me turn it over to them.
It's pretty widely recognized, I think, today that if you're interested in the real story, as far as best we can surmise, this is really the book on the incident. So if you're interested seriously, I can't recommend it more highly.